inflammation is good for the body until it gets out of off track, out of whack, off the rails, just creating that cytokine storm. So what the body needs to do is it has to have breaks and a check on that inflammation system. So the body needs to know when there's enough inflammation and it's time to stop the inflammation. And what we see with the virus is that stop mechanism is gone.
Well, there's a Pomeranian that's already been tested positive. And he was the pet of somebody who was positive. And so,
yes.
You know, was it yes. chicken and an egg? So did the Pomeranian get it and give it to his person, or did the person get it and give it to their Pomeranian? It
could be 100 times the number that we're actually being told if you do the algorithm on the math that shows the exponential climb. And we just haven't hit that number because we're not testing here in the United States. You know, I sent you the link with the doctor on the news talk where they literally shut him down, discussing that we don't have the ability to test. If we don't test, we have no knowledge of it existing.
Let's dive into that thought. So you're saying that, because most viruses jumping between species and cohabitating is not normal. Are you saying that this virus can live within animals and then go to humans and we can infect each other back and forth?
Well, there's a Pomeranian that's already been tested positive, and he was the pet of somebody who was positive. And so,
yes.
You know, was it
yes.
chicken and an egg? So did the Pomeranian get it and give it to his person, or did the person get it and give it to their Pomeranian? I mean, I don't think we know the answer.
And it's the receptors that the virus uses to jump species. The bat have it, the snake has it, and the humans have it. It's that ACE2.
Pigs have it.
ACE2 receptor. So the window's open. If the window's open, it's coming in. And we know, I've seen videos on Twitter and other resources, as you have. We have people we know in China. We know that there's a sea of dead animals all over the country.
Well, they have swine flu right there, right? Also in China.
Yes.
They also have a swine flu outbreak.
It's huge.
So they have two epidemics going on in China right now. Talk about a perfect storm.
Right. Well, that's essentially what it is.
And then, you know what, Sarah, one of the things that distresses me here is this laissez-faire attitude that, oh, well, this is a seasonal thing like influenza, and come spring, it'll all go away. We can go out and make daisy chains and dance in the park. It's not happening. Max has information about temperature, and the temperature, it's not going away.
Yeah, I went through all the countries and the outbreaks and started referencing, going back, tracking temperatures in those countries during these outbreaks. And we have temperature ranges from 30 degrees all the way up into the high 90s in Singapore and Malaysia. There's areas where Korea, there's areas where the temperatures are summertime temperatures and we're seeing a rash outbreak. So to assume or to quell the scare that this will die down because of summertime temperatures, I have a strong suspicion that that is not an accurate statement. You call that however you want to call it.
Sounds like propaganda.
Yeah.
It sounds like ignorance is worse.
So one of the things that I've been hearing is that, you know, the United States has a vaccine right now that they have in human trials. Israel, as of last week, said they found something that is going to be ready for human trials in a couple weeks. And my understanding is that, you know, with the Ebola, when that was out, it caused the vaccine actually was worse
SARS
than having Ebola. And then with SARS, yeah, the vaccine made it so that the next time you got it, it was that much more potent. Not got that exact strand, but got whatever. So what are your thoughts? And I know you're an expert on vaccines, so I'm going to direct it to you, Dr. Loretta. What is the deal with vaccines? I mean,
we hear that they've been able to sequence the proteins in the coronavirus, and they did that very quickly. So that's very exciting. what they need to do then is to be able to target those proteins so that the virus can't replicate or it can't infect. So it's one or the other. The issues that I have with those statements, I mean, they're very forward-looking and they sound very exciting, but going into clinical trials just means that they're going to give it to some people and see if they die or if they don't die. And that doesn't mean that you're going to be able to go to your local Safeway and get your vaccine next week or next month or September. It doesn't mean that. And I'm concerned about this sort of Pollyanna, oh, look, we're going to save the world because we're going to have a vaccine. We don't have a vaccine. We don't have one ready. And when we do, how long does it take? What, a year? Two years?
Well, more than that, at least 2 years. I mean, the drug development process, and we've covered this before, it's a hurdle that has to overcome. And even with a fast-track vaccine, that's going to open up Pandora's box. Because bad vaccines are just a horrible thing for humanity to have to endure. And I can pass it back to you.
Yeah. Well, I just talked about two examples with Ebola and SARS. But now, if this thing is a fast mutating virus, how are we even going to be able to do a vaccine?
You know, that's one of the problems with now. HIV is certainly a different virus because it's a DNA virus instead of an RNA virus. But they find mutates about every 6 months. And that's a fairly stable virus. Yeah. And so they've just not been able to find something that blocks that protein from infecting a cell.
Or
from replication. And HIV was diagnosed, in the 80s? So, you know, we're 40 years out on that one.
And it really goes back to how well the virus mutates to protect itself, because the virus has to be somewhat stable in order for a vaccine to take hold, get some roots, and actually work. That's why there's no cure for the common cold. There's no cold by vaccine because it mutates so fast. That's a rhinovirus.
We're
talking about it. Or coronavirus as well. They're similar, but there's enough differences. And the differences exist in the machinery of the virus itself and how fast it turns over those proteins. Because if it turns over those proteins fast enough, there's no moving. I mean, all the targets are moving and there's no stationary target to design a working vaccine. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. So like the polio virus is actually stable. I mean, it actually may go back to Egyptian times. So, and other ones like rubella, fairly stable, though there's some question about that mutating these days. If we look at some others like smallpox, again, a fairly stable virus. And so we were able to target it, just like Joe said. We could find...
And nearly eradicate it.
But this is just in a group of viruses that mutates very rapidly. Coronaviruses mutate all the time. They've been around forever, mutating like crazy. Like rhinoviruses, same thing.
But that's what makes it such a powerful bioweapon. If they're going to make a bioweapon, you're not going to do it on something that's stable.
And to claim that they're going to have a working vaccine in less than
in a couple months,
24 months, I'm hanging the hogwash tag on that.
Not sure I would take it.
And then you have the variables in science of time and temperature, even with the vaccine. You know, when they use the vaccine and test it in research and put it into a human or an animal specimen, it's at a given temperature and a given humidity and all the variables are a controlled environment.
Yes.
Now you take it out of that controlled environment, and what is that vaccine going to do? Is it going to hold its resilience in temperature, time, differentiation? Those are things that takes time to test. And
there's a lot of unknowns in the vaccine for a virus of this sort, with this mutation and this doubling, how quickly it doubles. I'll be amazed if they get one out in months, like
6 months, 18.
Well, let me ask you, maybe this goes to all of you. What happens if they decide that we got to save humanity and give everybody a vaccine? And we all know it's kind of full of crap. What do we do now?
Hopefully it's not mandatory.
What would you do?
I don't.
Yeah, it's basically they better not do that because.
Well, I know
stupid.
A doctor that can say that I took it.
That's the plan.
I don't take the flu vaccine every year.
So I don't either.
It's just that I wouldn't take it. I wouldn't. I would take my chances against the virus itself.
And the other thing that the Max was alluding to is that when they do phase one clinical trials, they're asking for volunteers that are generally healthy and they don't have comorbidity, because if they already had an existing condition, they can't say, oh,
they don't qualify for the study.
The person died because of the comorbidity and not because of the vaccine. So they're only taking healthy people. So Max is right. What happens when you give it to somebody who's already sick?
Yep.
We don't know until it goes out in the marketplace.
Yeah. And that's phase two. You know, phase one is let's give it to 100 people, make sure that people don't die.
Right.
Phase two is let's ramp it up. Let's give it to 1,000 or 2,000 people to make sure that it does what we think right. it's going to do. Phase three is, does what we think it does and it doesn't kill people. So let's ramp it up to 10,000 to 100,000 people. Still not a whole lot of people. Yeah. Phase four, which nobody ever talks about, is the adverse effects tracking.
Yep.
Every single time someone has an adverse effect that they think it's drug related, their doctors are supposed to report those back to the drug companies. Phase four
and
is where, oh my gosh, this is a bad drug, we need to pull it off the market, comes into play.
Right. And so probably the poster child for that would have been Vioxx.
Yep.
Vioxx was actually, it did what it said it would do. It helped with arthritic pain.
It just also got after your heart.
But the problem was that it also shut down the protective mechanisms against stroke and heart attacks. And it took the FDA 10 years to get that off the market, Sarah. Mm-hmm. And during those 10 years, almost as many people died as died in the Vietnam War. Almost as many people died from taking Vioxx, prescribed, you know, by their doctor.
Yeah.
Here, take this, took it correctly. Yeah. Almost as many people died as died in the.
Did more people die than it helped?
No.
Well, it's off the market now.
It's off the market, but it helps a lot of people. And it's a COX-2 inhibitor that's a very specific mechanism which helps a very specific people with arthritis. And arthritis is a debilitating autoimmune disorder.
Inflammation.
So, another good poster child for that process is phenylpropanolamine. It is a nasal decongestant very similar to pseudoephedrine.
Mm-hmm.
It took over 20 years to get that one off the market.
Yeah.
And you go out of the United States, you can still get phenylpropanolamine.
Over the counter.
So, I mean, it's.
Well, now there's fenfen. I mean, there's all sorts of.
It's a risk benefit analysis. That's why every time they advertise a drug on TV, there's a minute and a half of somebody speaking so fast you can't understand anything they say, so that they get those warnings on the air.
The one I especially like, the ones may cause death, but ask your doctor. And if you can't afford it, we'll help you pay for it.
Sorry, yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's jump to the C60, because I want to specifically talk about the diffuser that you have, because I know that you've had entire nursing home establishments call you so that all of their elderly can get on this thing. And I got my parents on it. Basically, everybody in the room, including my pet, can get this stuff directly into their lungs, and the C60 complete. And it for people who maybe neighborhoods or neighbors that can't afford it, you split it, you get a diffuser, and at night, every night, you get together and do this thing. It's something that people can do. Can you explain it?
Well, when I started doing the research on the C60 complete, I wanted to bring curcumin into the equation for the attributes that it carries, and the research is all on my website. It's all on my website. Then I was looking at ways to get it into the bloodstream in the most effective manner, which would be injecting it. So I took some of the product and ran it through a 0.22 micron filter, which is viral bacterial level for cleaning blood.
Super small,
and started playing with the idea of even injecting the fluid, which is done in other countries. And to release that to the population, is complicated. So what's the next step down for that? Is to get it.
Complication is called FDA.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to be kind here. So the next avenue to get it into the body, the most effective way, was to put it in an inhalant. And we started testing it and trialing it. And Dr. Loretta was one of the ones that trialed it early. Yep. and did her O2 saturation test.
Yeah, that was amazing. I love that. Did you know about that, Sarah?
He told me, but repeat it because the listeners do not know.
So in Colorado, your oxygen saturation should be like between 95 and 100. That's the little clip that they put on your finger. I think a lot of people are familiar with that. And for reasons that nobody has ever told me, mine always ran low. And I've lived in Colorado most of my life. And so mine was 92. And I was not happy with that. And so I got started on the, where's the other little piece to that? I got started on the inhalant. And so it sits next to my computer on my desk. And so one day I was thinking, let's just see if Max's theory is right. And so I got out my pulse oximeter, I put it on, and it's like, 95. And that's just 2 days later. And then 2 days after that was 97. And that's what it's been ever since.
So what you're saying, Loretta, is that Max made you normal?
No, Max increased my pulse ox. He didn't make me normal.
It's not possible.
Be sitting here on this panel, normal is not right.
So another, in my family, I have several people with asthma and various bronchial issues, and they started taking this, and we started recording data and information. And in fact, my wife, which is asthmatic and it was on an emergency inhaler and a maintenance inhaler, now takes neither one, and she's been on them for almost 10 years, and she hasn't taken either one in several months. Mm-hmm. So
we know it works.
So well, then, Joe, you talk about your dad.
Yeah, talk about your dad, because that's go ahead.
My dad is 80 years old, and he was an oral surgeon for his entire adult life. So in his younger years, he was in the dental labs and was exposed to aerosolized toxins with silica and mercury and other various things. And just recently in the last, 6 months, he was diagnosed with idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, which is a fancy medical word for your lungs are shutting down, making lots of fibrous scar tissue and losing function. And we don't know why.
And
we can't fix it. They gave him a couple drugs, imagine that, and said you probably have about 2.5 years left. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to accept that. I told Max about it. Max said get him on the C60 Complete oil in the diffuser, and he's been on the diffuser for a little over a month now. And he has it at his computer when he's sitting there playing his games. Max says make sure he gets 20 minutes a day. My dad is well over 2 hours a day because he likes his games. And what he sees is that his recovery is a lot faster. What used to take 15, 20 minutes to 30 minutes to recover his oxygen saturations, he's doing in 5. After he will do some activity without his oxygen on, he puts the oxygen back on and he recovers faster. He also has energy to take care of my 80-year-old mother who just had a knee replacement, hand and foot, all by himself. So...
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. And bowl.
I can't see my dad doing that. And bowl. Yeah. Now, but one of the things I've heard is that his cough is loosening up, and there's starting to be evidence of his whole system clearing out.
Immediately, the very first time he was on the inhaled oil, his cough became a lot more productive and a lot more gunk was coming out of his lungs. And he immediately started feeling better, sleeping better, had sharper mental capacities, higher energy levels and the recovery.
Because he had oxygen back to his brain, exactly. Back to his heart, back to his
and
lungs.
And he's happy with it. He doesn't miss it. He's on the gel caps now, and he's glad to be done trying to take the C60 complete in oil form, because he said that's just like swallowing a live bullfrog in the morning. Nothing worse will happen to you the rest of the day.
I like this. Yes, the diffuser and the gel caps is so much better. I hate drinking the oils. But let's get back to.
You're not the only one.
So. Yeah, I know. Let's get back to the inflammation issue, because I think that's the most serious thing that we have going on here. I mean, we have this bioweapon that's attacking inflammation. It's creating this storm in our body. What does C60 do complete? Due to inflammation, because that's the most important. I feel like we're doing this infomercial, and I ethically, this is what we have to do.
It sounds like that.
It sounds like it, but we all talked about it before we got on here and said this is the most important thing that we share, because it really is the best way to deal with this, or only serious. I mean, there's other natural products, but not like this. So talk about what it does to inflammation. And so no matter if you're young or old or whatever, it really helps.
Right. Well, the C60, the fullerenes, the little soccer balls of carbon, if you will, they absorb hydrogen molecules from its environment, and it rolls around in wherever it is in the body and looks for oxygen-free radicals, oxidative stress. The oxygen-free radicals are what can result in cellular damage, DNA strand breaks, dysfunction of proteins and enzymes and that sort of thing. And where the C60 complete will suck up all of those oxygen radicals, and it just gives it a hydrogen atom and sends it off on its merry way. It's no longer toxic. And then it absorbs another hydrogen atom from its environment. So that C60 fullerene molecule is just, it's really a machine to take care of oxidative stress.
Sponge.
It's the best one in the world. And it's a chemical reaction. So it's not biochemical, which means it doesn't rely on a bunch of cofactors in the body. And the chemistry is instantaneous. As soon as it picks up that oxygen radical, it gives it a hydrogen and neutralizes it. It picks up another hydrogen, and it just keeps that machinery cranking on that oxidative stress. Inflammation is chocked full of oxygen radicals and oxidative stress creating molecules. And C60 gets in there and sucks all of that up. And C60 was made better by Max when he added the curcumin and black seed, because both of those substances in and of themselves are also fantastic antioxidants.
And anti-inflammatory.
And anti-inflammatories. So you take the world's best anti-inflammatory in carbon-60, absolutely the best, and you give it the best, you know, the second baseman and shortstop, and you have the best infield that you can possibly field against oxidative stress and inflammation in this product right here. That's the easiest way to explain it.
I call it a vacuum cleaner for for free radicals.
Or sponge. And it frees up other organs that would be doing this.
Right.
So it's not going to burden the liver. It's going to free up the liver to take care of these metabolic byproducts of the virus.
Right.
And so, it's just hard.
When the oxidative stress is gone, the body finds itself with a surplus of resources that then it can reallocate to what the body does best. It's designed to heal.
Yeah.
The body knows where it needs to put resources in order to maintain survival. And C60 just gives it those resources.
Well, some people are doing these huge doses of vitamin C. How would you compare this to massive vitamin C dosages?
Well, you know, there's that wonderful BBC documentary in... There's a... the Merck protocol. Dr. Merrick was an intensive care doc at University of Northern Virginia Medical Center. And in the cytokine, so hold that thought. So in the cytokine storm, one of the end issues is sepsis. So the whole body becomes sick. And very few people come back from sepsis.
Right. It's an infection in your bloodstream, and there's no
Goes everywhere. Yeah.
There's no effective treatment for it.
So what Dr. Merrick came up with was giving intravenous ascorbic acid along with thiamine. And he did find that in giving it, I think it's like 25 milligrams, two or three times a day, he actually has a protocol for treating sepsis. So, but that's intravenous.
You have to be in the hospital.
You have to be in the hospital.
So basically that's the last, is that kind of like your last resort?
I would say that's the last resort. Now that protocol has been very successful. It's been published. If you want, I can send you a copy of it. But that has to be done under medical supervision in a care facility.
You have to stay ahead of the inflammation, Sarah.
Yeah.
You have to make sure your bucket's in the body of in anti-inflammatories and things that protect yourself from those reactions are full. I mean, and you get that from good nutrition. You get that from proper rest. You get that from being in good shape. You know, some people say round can be a shape. I don't know. And you get that from giving yourself the cofactors like C60. And that's just for the troll that called me fat the very first time I was on, Sarah. I'm sorry.
You know who you are.
We all get it. So whatever. I'm not called fat. I'm just everything that if there's any detail about me, someone's going to say it. So don't take it personally.
Right. No, of course not. But that's how C60 works. It's really a triple threat. And it is the closest thing that's been created, patented, and put on the market for people's well-being. It's like Ponce de Leon's Fountain of Youth, if you're really looking for a comparison. What do you think, Matt?
I kind of agree.
I mean, for what's available, I think that's one of the things,
right,
too.
Yeah.
So you can get this, whereas, you know, if you want, once you get sepsis, then, you know, then you're in intensive care.
Yeah.
Let's not get there.
Don't get yourself there. Okay.
Let's not do
what you can not to get there.
Exactly.
Okay. So now what I really like about the diffuser is a family can get together every night and do it together.
Yep.
You can get all your kids on it, your animals, everyone. Everybody can do it together. I take the gel caps and I also do the diffuser. But the diffuser lets my dog get it. It gives my dad an extra boost, who's really the one I'm worried about. And it's great. Like you were saying earlier, Max, before we got on air, you have a whole nursing home now that's starting to do it. I think that is the key. I'm just so pumped about the diffuser because this gives people an option to get people, you know, a friend of mine has, her mom is 90, her aunt is like in her late 80s. I'm like, get your mom and your aunt on this. You know, they can do the diffuser, they can split the cost if you're on a low budget. It's such a great thing. You can have five family members doing it if you absolutely need to. It ends up being pretty affordable in that way. I still think if you're somebody who's susceptible to it, take the gel caps too. But that's what made me so excited about it, is it's really a way for everybody to be able to afford this.
Well, I have a client in Virginia who's looking at doing they're doing a valve replacement later on this month. And I said, you know, I'm sending this to you. You've got to be using this. And so they have it on all night long in the bedroom so that he can go into surgery being in the best shape that I can get him in 30 days.
That works.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining today. And I know we'll have you back as more of this stuff develops.
Thank you. We'll keep
you
updated.
Sarah.